If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Bastard Pack has indeed returned to AEW, and he's got himself a very big first opponent. I am Tempest. I am joined by the Truth, Dan Layton, here on this AEW Collision Review on the WrestleTalk podcast channel. And Dan, I'm very excited to talk about this show for a lot of reasons.
Will that get demonetized, just naming Pack right at the beginning of the show?
I mean, I hope
the first
not.
7 seconds.
It's his name.
Yeah, well, this is it. But, like, I was going to do a big, sweary rant and say, if that was someone's name, we could get away with it. But,
yeah.
That would then I'd be just fulfilling the prophecy.
Of course. Not. A self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will. But, yes, if you are joining us for the first time, make sure that you like this video and subscribe to the WrestleTalk podcast channel. If you haven't already, and we are going to get into our review of this here episode of Collision with one of the great squash matches of all time, because that served as the prelude for the return that we will get to, because this was the in-ring debut of the new trio that is The Elite, with Kazuchika Okada, who made his debut on Dynamite this past week. Boy, am I happy and excited for all of this, because for a number of reasons, but mostly because there had been a lot of chatter about what are we going to get when Okada comes to AEW. Are we going to get 3.25 star Okada on TV? And how that would just pain me to my core. However, if you put him with a couple of dickhead EVPs, and the joke is that they don't care, and they're this kind of like nonchalant goofball heel duo, and you put the best wrestler in the world in there with them, I can kind of vibe with this dickhead heel Okada in this setting a lot more than I would have otherwise.
When I saw that this is what they were doing with Okada with the debut on Dynamite, I was enamored. Like, it really gave me a little bit of a jolt. This whole business is always talked about online of restoring the feeling or getting the feeling or whatever. For me, it's like restoring the past, looking backwards is always the fault. You've got to look sort of forward and think about creative new ways, things that are exciting, things that are interesting. And putting Okada, we've signed Okada properly. We've had Okada on the show before, like, you know, Forbidden Door, all this stuff. Here he is proper. He is All Elite. Oh, by the way, he's with the EVPs. He's with The Elite. He is a dickhead.
Yeah.
Instantly more interesting to me than just having him become a generic, I'm going to go after the world title or I'm going to be a good guy babyface thing. I love the, and it makes so much sense with what the Jacksons are doing.
Yes.
It makes so much sense with the Rainmaker, money from the sky, the way he carries himself, even down to the haircut is that of a rich sort of EVP kind of finance bro.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm so here for this.
I got to do my reaction to the debut and heel turn of Okada last week, but I didn't get to then sit back for a couple hours and give my, you know, my fully formed thoughts on it. And the more that I've thought about it, the more it has been like, what a perfect fit that is for this debut, because I had the exact same feeling that you just said, where how many times have we seen somebody come into AEW and the first few weeks or whatnot are just, we'll hear from this person, because the draw is they're on the show. And that might work for certain people. You certainly get an amount of buzz when CM Punk comes back to pro wrestling, yeah, and his first few appearances are like that, for sure. But with someone like Okada, having him immediately thrust into a huge angle and already giving everybody a look at what sort of character development we're going to be getting here is so interesting to me. Yeah. And again, like, I can talk about this all day. Pairing him with the Young Bucks makes so much sense on so many levels. It makes sense from a character point of view, like you just said, with like, you know, he is this rich guy. He got over in New Japan originally by being a cocky, arrogant heel. And then he became the rainmaker, greatest of all time that we know him to be. But he started out that way. And getting him to start off that way again in AEW, when everyone kind of knows who he is certainly an interesting choice. But pairing him with the Young Bucks, who he has the history with in TNA, people can look back, they're friends and such. The friendship they have is what got the Young Bucks into New Japan originally. So there's so many dynamics of like real and kayfabe mixing together. And then we got this match. And immediately I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Right. I wrote it down in my notes as the Elite versus other people. Yep. Because it didn't matter. This was three bodies that were there to begin or to continue this story, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And in the traditional collision squash segment, yeah.
And even more so than just the traditional kind of squash, we did not see either of the Young Bucks do anything in this match.
Nah.
Because you didn't need to. And when I say that this was the debut of this elite trio, really this was a 3-on-1 handicap match with Okada and three dudes. Because it was the Elite, I don't know why I'm giving air quotes, it's this new Elite, the Elite of the Elite, going against John Cruz, Liam Gray, and Adrian Alanis. So, Matt Jackson starts in the ring, pardon me, Matthew Jackson. Mm-hmm. I don't want our con coin to get deducted from our pay. He starts the match, but immediately tags out to Okada, who gets in the ring and eats all the offense from each of these guys and will just drop one of them and then hit his drop kick on another one of them. And everybody gets the big pop because Okada's drop kick precedes him and then hits the Rainmaker on the third one to get the pin. Simple, tidy. These are his big moves. If you haven't seen him before, he's got a great drop kick and this is his finisher. Excellent squash. But then we get some really interesting things. And you wanted to talk about restoring the feeling and such. I saw so many people this weekend be like, haha, this graphic for Big Business next week, that is the feeling restored. Because you had Eddie Kingston come out and try and fight the Elite 3-on-1 and it goes badly for him pretty quickly. But he then gets back up in the form of Penta, who does a little bit more, but doesn't get too much more offense in. He hits a sling blade and then gets taken out. But then, as Okada's standing there with the Continental Crown Championship belt, we hear the music of Pac. And Pac had, of course, made his announcement that he's returning to AEW at Revolution on the pre-show. So this was foretold, but we didn't know exactly when. Mm-hmm. He comes down to the ring. He hits a kick on one of the Jacksons. He dumps the other one outside of the ring and hits a drop kick to take him out. And then he goes nose to nose, or nose to chin, if you would rather, with Okada. And people are losing their minds. You're getting holy S-word chants, because this is what I love, is when, I don't know how many people would have reckoned that, like, oh, Pac and Okada is like, it's not number one or maybe one through like five on the Okada dream match scale in AEW. But those who know, which at this point in Pac's AEW career I would hope would be most of y'all, you know that this match is going to be incredible. And so you got holy S-word chants, and you got Pac eventually dumping Okada out of the ring because they have a fight, and Eddie Kingston just gets on the mic and says, hey, Big Business, six-man tag, after Pac says that he's back.
He cuts his lovely Geordie promo.
Yeah.
I'm back like a groove.
I can't do it as well as
I can barely do it. It's a very difficult accent to manage.
But he does his Pac promo of I'm back, and like I said, Eddie Kingston announces a six-man tag for Dynamite Big Business, and this is a hell of a six-man tag.
Yeah.
This is the proper debut of this Elite as a trio, because holy Moses, this is such an incredible trios match waiting to happen.
Yeah, I think it's also, so the Pac return thing is was fun because you remember when Jeff Hardy came back to WWE, like in the, I mean, this might be very early on and you're starting to watch it kind of thing.
I've seen everything, Dan.
Yeah, you literally have. But like when I remember, I was a massive Jeff Hardy fan. He left, did his TNA thing, was announced to be returning to WWE, announced to be on this episode of Raw, and then come straight out to have a tete-a-tete with Edge kind of thing. And
it's after that SummerSlam 2006.
Yeah, and it's that thing you're talking about of like, you know, we knew Pac was coming back, but we didn't know where. So there's one thing to have a surprise return. There's another thing to have a return be a surprise.
Yes.
Where it is placed on the card. And I really liked this. This was really like effective for me. I think my take on this, and I don't want it to be seen as negative or criticism, because if anything, it's constructive. We want to chant for Okada, right? The fans are chanting Okada a lot. People are really excited to see Okada. It is so cool, this expectation of this match. You're right, it's going to be a banger. Like that singles match is going to be amazing. Before we get there, we get a six-man that's going to be amazing too. I hope that we get more and more of the Elite and Okada just being little dickheads, just being little bros. I hope that we get enough reason that will make us as fans buy into wanting to boo. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not me saying that this was bad or the audience was bad for chanting Okada, because I would too. Mm-hmm. This is just like, I'm so excited by this.
Well, would you expect them to chant for Adrian Alanis? Probably not.
Not so much. But this is what I'm saying. Like, you want them to buy into what you're selling.
I totally get what you're saying. And I very much think that we will get that based purely on what we've gotten from them online since then.
Exactly.
It's all the things where they go back to their locker room after this, the Elite do, and they're like, haha, Big Kaz, what are you going to spend your money on? Oh, I'm going to buy a Kia. And they're like, what? A Kia? He's like, I'm going to get a Ferrari. And he is so much enjoying being a smarmy dickhead heel.
Right.
And we were starting to get that over the last year in New Japan as well, because he was, I don't know what you'd want to call him, but like grizzled, angry veteran Okada, where he was having an issue with all the youngins that were coming in, the Tsujis, the Shota Umino's, even Kiyomiya from Noah. Like, that was his character. He had no time for any of these young boys. And now to bring that sort of attitude with a different spin on it to AEW, with him in the suit and tie and looking all sharp and prim and proper. He looks like a model with a nice prim proper hairstyle. I fully expect that this partnership with the Young Bucks is going to get him massive heat after we get past the initial, like, everyone seeing Okada for the first time kind of feeling.
That's what I mean. I hope they just lean in as much as they want, because I think there's so much to play with. I think it's so effective. I think there's... You almost have to fight against the will of the audience, who are just inherently excited. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I was quite happy that they just did it automatically. In fact, there's another place on this show where in the past criticisms of AEW, and especially when we've been on Collision, have been not jumping while the iron's hot. You know, like letting things cool before going anywhere near it. Here they just went straight in with, we're going to do this with Okada.
Yeah.
And it was so effective. And I would love to see them really lean in, do as many segments as they want, make it, you know, we're always going to be excited to see Okada. It's not a negative to want people to not chant for him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even we had a moment when Nigel is yelling, take my money. And that's kind of an example of it, where it's like, I know it's cool to see him on the roster, and I feel the same way, but I want to buy into the character of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm just excited to see where they go with it. And I think not only, you know, using Pac in this way, but also Kingston is a great person to use
for
this particular jumping off point.
Absolutely. And
you couldn't get more of a contrast. Sorry to interrupt you. You couldn't get more of a contrast really between Eddie Kingston and suited and booted the Elite, who, by the way, are like calling themselves Matthew and Nick. This is what I mean. Matthew and Nicholas, we see right through you.
Yeah.
You aren't like Okada is suited and booted prim and proper, like looks a million bucks. They look a mess, to be honest. So it's like,
they're playing the part of we're businessmen and such, whereas Okada is like
that.
He's the greatest wrestler on earth who's going to walk, talk, and dress like it.
Which is what makes it even better for the Elite, for the Young Bucks, the Jacksons. I don't know what they are. Are they not Young Bucks anymore?
I don't know. The EVPs, if you will.
It's what makes it even better to see them as sort of like hangers on. And they're like, to your point, they tagged out in this match. They didn't even get involved, kind of thing. And where does this lead ultimately? I love it all.
It's a very exciting package.
To be abundantly clear, with no negative from where I'm at, I just want them to give us it.
You know? And before we move on, I do also want to hammer home just how excited I am that PAC is back as well, because it kind of gets lost in a bit of the shuffle of this conversation because the Okada stuff is still so new and, you know, everybody wants to talk about it and such. But I was having a conversation about this sort of thing with Luke after Revolution, where we got the vignette of PAC coming back and also the return of Kyle O'Reilly, where you look at the amount of talent that is just being injected into this roster that had absolutely no absence of talent going in. But you add in Ospreay, you add in Okada, you add in, presumably, Mercedes Moné, and then you add in Kyle O'Reilly and PAC. Those are five major players that you can add in up and down this roster, any sort of combination of matches with pre-existing wrestlers. And that's even still without the likes of like MJF's out right now, Kenny Omega's out right now, Adam Cole's out right now.
Because you can have too many, like, if you have all of that, you're like, what do I do with it? And yet at the same time, it's a few of these people, Hangman, you know, Omega, they're out of the picture for a little bit, you know, hopefully not too long, but we don't know, and we shouldn't speculate on that. So it's nice to have not only an injection of talent, returning talent like PAC, who does feel like AEW to me, like that's you know, very much early days. You've got Ospreay and Okada, who we know within an AEW context, but also are new enough to feel fresh.
And then
if we do, I'm assuming we do have a Moné on the way, and that's brand new for the scene. It's brand new for AEW. So, like, there's a nice moment here to take advantage of and bring that talent in and just give it a little facelift and have fun with it.
It's a very exciting time right now. It's very exciting to see the prospective matches we could get, especially with a very big show coming to this town in the summer.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm very excited for all such things. But let us know how excited you are in the comments down below. What did you think of the return of PAC and Okada's in-ring debut as a member of the AEW roster? Let us know the answers to all of those things in the comments. And if you haven't already, give this video a thumbs up and subscribe to the WrestleTalk podcast channel so you never miss a podcast just like this one.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Going to get into the rest of our collision review here, starting with the opener. Holy smokes. The opener of this show was Shane Taylor of Shane Taylor Promotions against Bryan Danielson. And Bryan Danielson now officially coming through the babyface tunnel.
The tunnels. Which gives us this kind of fun whose tunnel is who playlist.
It doesn't work as well, which is like, oh, which side of this stage thing are they walking out of? No, I need the babyface and heel tunnels.
Do you like the new staging? Like, you know, it's consistent. How do you feel about the new Dynamite look?
Because I like it. Yeah. I think it's snazzy.
Yeah, that's
it. You know, it's just... I apologize to Mikey Ruckus, who needed to have a new song and the Dynamite theme of old be taken away so that the Young Bucks could implement the Cody Vader.
Yeah.
As I'm sure was the reason for all these changes. But I think in general, the addition of the tunnels is really sleek. Mm. I like the whole look of it. I like color in my wrestling in general, just like the vibrance of it. I know I've been on record a lot of the time saying like, oh, I want my wrestling to be a bit more like dark gritty. And gritty and that sort of thing. But if I'm not going to get that, I do kind of prefer, like, I really like the colorful powder explosion aesthetic of the early Dynamite days. And it's not the same as that now, but there's still the multicolor aspect of it. It appeals to my colorful brain.
Well, it gave it an identity. Separated it from everything. And then the rebrand last year, which just was like, it just made it feel bland and secondary. It made it just feel any show, you know. It took away a lot of the sort of character that I associate with AEW. And then when Collision came out and had its own identity splattered all over the place, nice little throwback to Nitro, but also felt like its own thing. It kind of emphasized that point even more to me. So I'm a big fan of it. I did think when Danielson's walking down this ramp, it doesn't not look like a cock and balls. Like, it's two big circles and then it's very phallic. So
Bryan Danielson might make a point out of something like that.
I mean, yeah, like, tell me, you're not going to be able to unsee it. If you haven't seen it already, I know people are calling them the condoms.
Yeah.
It's balls. It's a cock and balls. And that's fine. That's fine.
Who doesn't love it in the wrestling? Anywho, Bryan Danielson, of course, the babyface in this match, comes down to the ring. And if this is news to you, I don't know what to tell you, but Bryan Danielson's a very good babyface.
Mm.
And him wrestling a larger opponent who is the heel is a formula that will always, always, always work.
Mm.
And they start wrestling early, and there are a lot of strikes in this, and they are going back and forth, and Danielson is just getting lit up with chops. And they are just firecracker chops. They explode and you hear it all around the building. And before long, you're starting to see the welts on Danielson's chest. You really saw them after the match. My God. But they're going back and forth with chops and strikes and kicks. And Danielson is getting the piss beaten out of him. He gets knocked out so hard that he just kind of like falls through the ropes, lands on the outside. And this allows Lee Moriarty to give him a shot. He eventually gets back in the ring. Very interestingly, I do want to point out that I believe this was the first proper time we had seen Bryan Danielson go and confront Nigel McGuinness over his shots.
Oh, I think I've been looking down. I missed this.
He goes over and Nigel is, you know, giving it to him, the clam digger thing, as he usually does. And Danielson just kind of like turns to him.
Mm.
And Nigel just kind of goes, whoop, don't mind me.
Oh, that
don't
is
mind
fun.
Me. And before this, it was always like, it makes sense that Nigel would have a problem with Danielson given their history and such. Were they working something for the future? I don't know. You'd like to think, but I mean, you never know.
McGuinness is always working on something.
He's always working on something. But this was the first time where we saw it given back a little bit.
Mm.
And now I'm like, oh my. I don't want to get my hopes up too far.
Well, we have 5 months.
We have 5 months.
4 months until a build should start, but let's be honest, based on previous. Although, we had build begin immediately today, so that, you know, maybe they're changing and turning a corner. But, like, you never know. And I mean, I didn't spot that, but what I did think, there was a moment where Nigel's earlier on being like, using the ropes, like, you know, how cheap or whatever, and then Tony's like, bet you've used the ropes in your career. He's like, well, yeah, but that's a different sort of different. And I just always love it. And you're never going to get a complaint out of me from seeding a Danielson McGuinness story. It'd be lovely for them. I thought this match was a proper dominant Shane Taylor performance.
It was. There has been...
Which surprised me.
There's been a good amount of Shane Taylor on Collision. Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed that. Big, big fan of Shane Taylor's work. We are here at the channel. But this, again, was one of those matches where it felt like a bit of a statement. And we know how much Brian Danielson loves putting people over. Mm-hmm. He is a master at work when he is told to put someone over. And he may not have done the job here, but he made Shane Taylor look like such a monster.
Yeah.
I really hope that we get to see Shane Taylor. It's one of those deals where we saw a little bit of this later on in the show where... It's the week after a pay-per-view. Maybe now we start to cycle in some new faces and give pushes to people who may not have been receiving them before. I very much hope that Shane Taylor Promotions is part of that push.
Right.
I would very much like to see Shane Taylor get a bit of a run, get to be able to stack up some wins here, because he's too excellent to be the high-profile guy that the main event guys can just beat.
Mm.
You know, whether it's Moxley or Danielson or whatever. I'm not saying that those type of guys shouldn't beat him. But I would also like to see some wins for Shane Taylor mixed in so that everyone can be reminded of how awesome he is as well.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking while you were talking there. I'd like... Something about Collision in general feels like a show where we do a lot of seeding.
Mm.
You know, a lot of seed laying things... I'd like to see this person do more. I'd like to see this person do more. Like, it's a Saturday night viewing, I suppose. So that's kind of the tone of the show in general, is some good wrestling and a few squashes to sort of further a little bit along. I would love a little bit more stakes. I would love a little bit more competitiveness where Shane Taylor, who has been seeded so many times on Collision, gets a shot at a title. There are about 20 of them. Can one of them be on the show? Like, I don't know. There's something about it feeling like Dynamite is the show to watch.
Mm.
Collision is the show to read.
Interesting.
And then check. Sometimes I feel like, especially in the early days when we had all those tag team matches, which was so electric, and there was actually, you know, a lot of TNT title stuff there. We did have some of it, which was there to feed into Dynamite in this episode. I don't know. I feel like I have this conversation all the time of, yeah, I really hope this shows that this gives us a chance to see Shane Taylor go somewhere and do something.
Mm-hmm.
I just would like more of that on Collision.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think we might start to see some of that sort of thing with the introduction of the tag title tournament, which we found out will be starting on Collision.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of that is going to be split between Dynamite and Collision and such, but I'm hoping that we get to see a good amount of it on this show.
And we had it with the C2 as well. Like,
yeah,
you know.
For sure. And you never know. Maybe Shane Taylor Promotions will be in that tournament. I'd quite like to see it. I'd like to see more representation of Shane Taylor Promotions on this show in winning roles. But of course, if you did read this episode of Collision, you would have missed a damn fine opening match.
That's
as
it.
Shane Taylor really did take it to him. He hit a big guillotine leg drop on the apron, and they were doing a lot of deals where he would swing a lariat and then turn around and absolutely flatten Danielson with another one. And that then set up the finish, which was he missed a couple clotheslines, and it led to Danielson running into the corner, coming out of it with the Bisaiko knee and getting the pin. This was an excellent opening match. I can't say enough good about it. But this then was followed by the arrival of one William Ospreay, who comes down to the ring and returns the favor of Bryan Danielson, interrupting his celebration on Dynamite and getting on the mic. And I love watching Will try and do American TV wrestling, because it's not that he's not good at it, but you could tell this is still a transition where he's watching his mouth. And sometimes successfully, other times not, as we'll get to. But he gets on the mic, and people are already starting to do the Ospreay, 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 Ospreay kind of chants. So he gives some love back to them. He wanted to give a big hand to Bryan Danielson and Shane Taylor for the match that they had had. But he goes and he gets a second mic, and he gives it to Bryan because he wants to have a chat. And he wants to say that Bryan Danielson is the standard bearer. He's the bar. He is the man. He's the great Bryan Danielson. And he's noticed this since coming to AEW. And he's not been there for very long, but he has noticed this so far. And he noticed that Bryan Danielson came out and interrupted his main event celebration on Dynamite after his TV debut as a member of the active roster. And it felt like he had something to ask him. And he also called him a cheeky little slag.
He did do that.
But Bryan Danielson then gets
it's
on
weird,
the mic.
Sorry, it's weird hearing the word slag on American television.
Isn't it
like,
just?
It's not a thing that they ever say. That's a very British word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know the EastEnders line?
Probably not.
I didn't become just a little bit of a slag. I became a total slag. It's quite iconic. Look, I'm all for it. More of this, please, Will.
Maybe we'll see that from Will when he turns heel.
Yeah,
properly
I became a total slag. Like, and if you as an American don't know what the word slag means, like, it must be very confusing.
I'm sure you can get it. Like, you know.
There's another word that sounds, well, it's got the same two first letters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fair. But Bryan Danielson hops on the mic next, and he says that he doesn't just want to ask him something. He wants to also tell him something. And he wants to welcome Will to AEW. And for years, he has watched Will Ospreay look down the camera and say that he is the best wrestler in the world. So now he wants Will Ospreay to prove it. And he challenges him to a match at AEW Dynasty. And Will just accepts. They shake hands. And my God, are we going to see maybe the best match of all time?
Top. Chapeau. This was everything it needed to be. Like, this is where I wanted to single him out for praise earlier on, because in the past on Collision, we have talked about them not striking while the iron is hot and them not taking advantage of their opportunities. You know, when Punk came back, it's like, you know, do we drip feed? And sometimes I can often preach, like, caution. Let's not go too, like, on the WWE side of things, I'm saying, do we do Jen Cargill and Bianca right now? Like, and I'm like, well, let's take our time with it. We don't need to hurry it. This is an example where actually maybe we kind of should. Like, we've got Ospreay and we've got Danielson, and Danielson's winding down, and we might as well just book it.
Yeah.
Like, let's just do it.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why wait?
And we want to see it, don't we? Like, so, yeah. And I thought that it did everything it needed to do. It sets them up. I know Ospreay's already taking some time off, which is like, I don't know the circumstances of it, but he tweeted he finished his tour.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's like taking time off or if he will have just done his first like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, do the Dynamite, do the pay-per-view, do the next Dynamite, do Collision, do a pre-tape in there to take him through the next Dynamite, and then, you know, he's home for a week and then he'll come back or something like that.
But when you have a match like this where it is just about they're both sort of respecting each other.
Yeah.
You know, and also the other thing was I was like, okay, so maybe we'll get this at like Double or Nothing or there's a big... I completely forgot they've added in a Dynasty. And I think that's going to change, especially if they're doing more pay-per-views. Like, I assume we're having Wrestle Dream again this year. Like,
I would think so.
You know, we've got... it sounds to me a lot more like they are pushing more and more pay-per-views per year. We don't have announcements yet, but they may well announce more for between... So, I mean, what would it be? It would be Double or Nothing and then a couple of months and then All In.
Well, I would imagine they're still going to do Forbidden Door this year.
Okay, yeah, I forgot that's in the summer.
Yeah, which will be like kind of end of June, beginning of July type, which I believe is at Arthur Ashe this year.
Right.
And that should tide us over between then and then All In being the next one. Mm-hmm. Maybe there'd be one in the like end of July, beginning of August. But I'm going to assume that that's not the case because they've said, I believe, that 9 to 10 pay-per-views is kind of what they're thinking year on year, which I think is a good number for them.
I do too.
Get like a nice 5-6 week build between most of your pay-per-views, because I do think having only four with the cross-branded one in the mix was a little bit tough, and it felt like we were holding off on the real big main event matches for a pay-per-view, yeah. but there were never enough pay-per-views to do all of them.
That's it. And that's why I feel like this is going to change the way they do their operation completely. And it's nice to see that them that is it. Like, they're just taking advantage because there weren't enough pay-per-views. Now there are, so we might as well just do the matches.
Yeah.
I think also we as fans come to expect the big matches, the big pay-per-view. There's almost something like, or will we have to wait for next year's All In for this kind of thing? Or we have to, you know... Or I feel like sometimes it's like, well, no, we're here now. Let's do it now. Yeah, I'm into it. And I'm into Ospreay Danielson.
Yeah,
what
shocker.
A plot twist.
It's working for me as well. And the next thing we had was Mariah May taking on Trisha Dora. Trisha Dora is very good, and Mariah May comes out with, I'm guessing, is her new look. Which is the old Toni Storm look. I'm not critiquing that. I think it's a fun little character thing. Mm-hmm. She's the Toni Storm super fan, and she's been more or less gifted the mantle of be old Toni Storm by Toni Storm, and had did it again here. And it works for me. Mm-hmm. I think it is, you know, as good as just doing the same thing but without the outfit, you know, so it
adds an extra note to the character.
It's pretty neat. And this was again a fine little match. It was fairly quick. Mariah May won with the Mayday, and then afterwards we had something that was very interesting because Toni Storm had announced that they were doing the first ever Tony Awards, Tony with an I, so they don't get sued.
Be careful, we don't want to be sued.
No, it's like Groundskeeper Willie. Shh, you want to get sued? That's a Simpsons reference.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's The Shinning. Anyway, great episode.
I'm sure it's very funny. Hit me with your Frasier references, then I can talk. Yeah.
But Toni Storm comes out, and this, of course, it's award season. I won't ask your thoughts about the Oscars.
Oh, because I stayed up and watched it.
Yeah, this will be a full hour and a half long podcast in that case. We could have some real discussions. But she comes out, and she says the first ever Tony Awards, Tony with an I, says we don't get sued. Going to present the best performance award, and the nominees are Mariah May for her performance as Toni Storm at Revolution. And the winner is...
Yeah.
And she kind of fumbles with the envelope a little bit. It won't quite open. And she opens it and she says, Mariah May! Yay! And she goes to deliver what was a shoe.
It was a flip-flop.
It was a flip-flop.
It was a fluffy flip-flop.
It was her her slides or flats or whatever they're called to Mariah May as her trophy. And this is when she gets jumped by Deonna Purrazzo, who got booed for this because she was interrupting the goofy, wacky, fun time of Toni Storm.
Yeah.
And this did not turn out well for Deonna Purrazzo because she got laid out and DDT'd on the rampway by Toni Storm and then presented the shoe and then they went on their way. Now, this was all very interesting, and I don't necessarily mean interesting in a good way, because I thought it was a fun, quirky little segment, as we tend to get from Toni Storm, but the Toni Storm-Deonna Purrazzo match from Revolution was one of the weaker ones on the show. No fault to the wrestlers involved, but it wasn't a hot match, because people don't want to boo Toni Storm.
It's so interesting.
And Deonna Purrazzo is not over to the level that her popularity would be able to counteract the popularity of Toni Storm, the heel. So you just kind of left with like a cold match because the heel is getting cheered and the person that's making the comeback is getting no reaction. So when this then transfers over to weekly television, as we saw here, it's just kind of like, it feels like the roles are backwards a little bit. And I get that a lot of what they're trying to do with Toni Storm, they want to work as a heel act, you know, having Mariah May at ringside, costing the opponent matches, and the goofy Butler Luther and such like that. But it's popular.
Right.
And the popularity of it is going to affect the quality of the matches, the performances, and the people that she's working with. Because there's nobody else that's on that level of popularity. And that might change. In a few days, that might change. But as of right now, it's doing nothing for Deonna Purrazzo.
No.
And it's making this women's title reign feel a little bit like when Britt Baker was champion. and all the same pay-per-view matches all had the same finish, with Jamie Hayter and Rebel getting involved, leading to a DQ finish with this person that everybody liked to do the DND thing with. And the heel was popular, and it led to a reign that some people got sick of. And I don't think people are quite sick of the Tony Storm reign yet, but I think it could get there with more pay-per-view matches that have a weird backwards, you know, dynamic to it.
I think it's fascinating because I had this conversation, or I was having a conversation adjacent to this with Ollie upstairs in the office, because the character doesn't work for him. And I like the character. I thought this Tony Awards with an eye so we don't get sued was exquisite nonsense. I thought it's a lot of fun. You know, the press conference stuff that she does, if it's not going to build to a match at some point between her and Wendy Richter, I'm going to be very disappointed. I think it's brilliant work. It's brilliant character work. The problem is that it doesn't get anyone else over with her. You are a sideshow in the Tony Storm show. It is, no one else is on that level, with all the respect in the world to Deonna Purrazzo, and they presented her with her entrance as this huge get. Didn't live up to that, you know? Now, is Mercedes Moné someone who is on that level? You could very strongly make the argument that yes, she's, because she's already with such high star power, that maybe she's someone who's able to go against Tony Storm. It's just that I don't know if we're going anywhere near those two, certainly not immediately.
That's the question.
Because if you look at big business, and I will do my feminist agenda if you don't mind, 6 minutes for this match, 3 minutes of which for picture in picture, there's only one women's match booked for next week, which a whole show built around your major new star. Like, it's not just a case of she's a new signing. The show is blue like her hair. The show is set in Boston. The show is called Big Business. She's the CEO. Like, it's, this is the point, right? So I'm assuming that they see her as this big, big star. You'd almost want to, it doesn't say a lot about the division that they're not announcing a segment for Tony Storm.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to me why they've made those choices. And I think a problem with the Tony Storm character is that, with the possible exception of Mariah May, nobody else is being elevated.
Mariah May was going to be the one that I was going to shout out that is getting elevated, but you are right in that. I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
Please continue your
point. It's just that they get sucked into this, because this character is so popular, and I love it. Like, I'm really into it. I really get entertained by it. It's just that if they're going to continue it to her to be this heel, that's never going to get her opponents over, because no one is able, because of the lack of screen time, because of the lack of programs elsewhere, the lack of building other people up, no one's ever going to be able to get there. Do you know what I mean? No one is ever going to be able to meet Tony Storm at this level of, because this character is so wild. And it was something that instantly we all went, oh, hang on, this is fun, when she started going a bit crazy, when she lost the belt. It's just, I don't want the character to stop, right? But there needs to be a change in order to allow it to do what it's supposed to do, which is get Tony Storm over, get the belt over, and subsequently get the division over. Yeah. I hope that Mariah May is turn Mariah May heel, have Tony Storm be a face, at some point, I'm not saying immediately, that's maybe how you make it. I think Tony Storm as face, still this Delulu character that we can all cheer and get behind. And actually it becomes like, okay, I'm sorry to Sunset Boulevard it, but that's what the character is. If you've not seen the movie, and that's the only other movie that people in the wrestling industry have seen, so I'm thrilled about it. But the character of Sunset Boulevard, Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard, is this old silent film star who has become a recluse and gone a bit mental. And the character that Luther is playing is her old director, Max, and sends her fan mail and makes her think that she's still a star kind of thing. That was the base point. Come act two, sort of the movie, Joe, the guy who has come and essentially become her personal writer kind of thing, has started to kind of like her. Like, yeah, to be honest with you, I kind of like her. She's a bit crazy, but she's harmless kind of thing. Spoilers for how the movie ends. It doesn't turn out that way. But you could almost have us take on that part. You know, she's crazy, but I've sort of come to become accustomed. I like her. I think turning her face would save a lot of that issue.
Yeah.
And because, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential in the whole division. I don't want to see the Toni Storm character go away, but it is an issue. And that, I think, is a very elegant and simple solution to what is becoming a problem.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And as we get further into the show, I will get to some of the points that you made, which I also agree with. Because next we had Nick Wayne of the Patriarchy, with the Patriarchy at ringside, taking on Adam Priest. Now, for those who are unaware, Adam Priest is a independent wrestler on the U.S. indie scene, and he is very talented. And granted, this was not the kind of match that is going to blow people's minds or steal the show or anything like that. If this match was booked on Defy or Prestige or Warrior Wrestling or whatnot, you might have a different story, but that's not his point here. That's fine, but I just want to shout out Adam Priest because he's a very talented individual. Nick Wayne, of course, he gets the win in this match. They do a lot of really good, fun stuff. There's some play with Luchasaurus getting involved on the outside, pardon me, Killswitch getting involved on the outside. And eventually, Nick Wayne does win this match with the Wayne's World. And then after the match, Christian goes around ringside to somebody holding up a sign that is talking about him. And it seemed as if this same person was also holding up a sign earlier that says, I want to be Mariah May's ex-husband. And if that's the case, I have questions for you. But regardless, playing the role of man who holds up signs, he tears up that sign, Christian does, and immediately gets grabbed and thrown into the crowd by a man wearing a mask. And the rest of the Patriarchy goes...
A conquistador mask.
Mm. A very good shout. He gets thrown into the crowd. The rest of the Patriarchy comes to his aid. The masked man jumps off of the steps and everything, and then finally unmasks to reveal himself to be Adam Copeland. After chasing Christian down this week on Dynamite, he gets his revenge once more, gets back in the ring, grabs the TNT title, and the Patriarchy surrounds the ring to try and take him out. But before Adam Copeland gets in the ring, he grabs a case. Looks like a small guitar case or something. Puts it in the ring, opens it, and it says the word Spike on it. And Christian sends all four members of the Patriarchy to each of the four corners to try and all swarm Copeland at once. And through a little bit of cheeky camera work, Copeland reveals what's in the case to Christian, and Christian backs off. And they all leave up the ramp, and Copeland gives a basically the same promo he cut at the end of Dynamite, but says, Christian Copeland 3 in Toronto, an I Quit match. There you go. Everybody cheers. What's in the box? As Brad Pitt once said. I'm going to guess that it was like a barbed wire baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the Mick Foley thing.
Well, they did the table fire spot in the last one, so it would be, yeah, that would make sense.
That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Could also be whatever Abyss used to call his board with all the nails in it.
Yeah.
Janice, I believe, from TNA. Not as much of a connection there, but there's something in this thing that I imagine we will see the reveal of in Toronto. I'm very sad I'm not going to be able to see this match, but...
As in live? Or,
Yeah.
Because you know it's on television. They'll broadcast it.
Yeah.
So you will be able to see it.
Yeah. But how many times am I going to get to see Copeland wrestle live again?
That's fair.
Hopefully at least one more time. But regardless, this was a fine little segment.
Mm.
I like that they progressed and kept the momentum going from Wednesday. I've been into the whole Patriarchy and Adam Copeland thing the whole way through.
Mm.
This was another fun little segment.
Yeah, So first of all, I liked the match very much.
Yeah.
Like, it was a nice tight little match. Obviously, it wasn't going to do gangbusters because it was a Nick Wayne match on Collision. But you know, I don't know Adam Priest. But I would like to. As a result of seeing this and your ringing endorsement. So fair play to them for that. I really liked the Conquistador mask touch. I liked the element of they were playing with all of that, because it almost feels like this exists in a separate plane. Do you know what I mean? Like, if the Cody verse was a thing, the Copeland verse is another thing. Like, I feel like if we're gonna follow the Brad Pitt what's in the box, maybe it was Spike Dudley's head. I don't know.
I hope not.
But just Spike Dudley in general, he could probably fit in the box. No, I don't know. I don't like I Quit matches, but I do like Christian, and I like what Christian brings out in Copeland, and I like the Patriarchy, even though I do feel that maybe they've got a little bit tepid over the past few weeks, months.
I didn't like the immediate loss of the TNT title at World's End and the Money in the Bank cash-in.
That's what I mean.
With the TNT title shot. I didn't like that aspect of it. But otherwise, I've been into everything that they've been doing. Love Copeland. He's my favorite wrestler. Mm-hmm. That will buy a little bit more time and love from me, and it always will.
That's only natural, though. That's what we all do.
These are my favorite guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to love it more than most. I don't mind an I Quit match when it doesn't involve John Cena. You know?
Yeah, I will say, like, my I Quit matches aren't necessarily... certainly the ones over the past sort of 20 years or so haven't been the ones that should be considered poster child for the I Quit match.
Yeah, no kidding. But still... an exciting development for this. What's in the box? Speculate.
I like the. I like that. I like having a little bit of. I'm annoyed that I don't know, but I'm gonna have to watch now. Mm-hmm. So do you know what I mean? It's that.
Yeah.
It's clever.
Yeah. So next up, we had an interesting match. We had Titan going against Lionheart Chris Jericho. Now this was a fairly long match. Mm. They got plenty of time, and. I don't think this Atlanta crowd knew Titan very well, and I don't really expect them to. You know, mostly works in CMLL and New Japan. He was, however, in the finals of the Best of the Super Junior tournament last year and had a fantastic match in that tournament final. So he's gotten plenty of wins over in New Japan. Not quite enough for my liking, but that's another thing. But he's a very talented individual, is the point that I'm getting to. So he was able to show that in this match, and Chris Jericho is another one. And I don't want every time I'm on a show that Chris Jericho appears on to just be me bitching about Chris Jericho. But I do want to point out that at this stage, I don't think Chris Jericho is over.
Right.
I think Judas is over. And you see when Jericho comes out to his far superior entrance theme, he just doesn't get much of a reaction anymore. And... I think there's always something to the conversation of, oh, well, there's a Twitter fandom and the people in the building and whatever. They're different things. You can't base what you do off of this one when this one matters and such. But I think everyone's starting to come to the same conclusions about Chris Jericho right now.
If you are AEW has always been seen as the company that caters to the hardcore fan.
Yes.
Right? I would argue that a hardcore fan is probably quite online.
You'd think.
So I don't think that you can necessarily separate what's going on in the arena from what's going on online. I think often it's the, certainly with the level of crowds they're drawing at the moment, it's not a lot of people who are just going out for the wrestling. It's a lot of people who are very committed because they don't market. Like you know, it's people who know that they're coming and want to be in the room. So I think they're actually probably very close together. What is interesting is I was a Jericho fan for a very long time.
As was I.
I read all of his books until there were too many books to read. I read the first three. A lot of the sort of Jericho lore and my appreciation for his ability to reinvent and go with the flow, which, you know, for some people have said it is now more of a, I'll latch myself onto the hot new thing, mm-hmm. Which maybe is a fair take, maybe is a cynical take, maybe probably the reality somewhere in the middle. I still say a little bit of the bubbly. I still, like, in everyday parlance, mm-hmm. like, there's a lot of time and affection I have for Jericho, and I think the interesting thing about the idea of Judas being over but Jericho not being is that Judas represented a character change. The Ocho, being the ROH world champion, represented a character change and evolution. He was always that person who was able to change. The Lionheart thing feels... I even stopped and I said, like, hang on, is this a regular thing now? Like, and you pointed out, I know he does when he's wrestling luchadors, because obviously it's a throwback to his Lionheart days in Mexico. It just doesn't feel like that evolution of the character. And actually, there's something about him lately that does feel sort of like... stagnant, which mm-hmm. I'm not used to from Chris Jericho as a Jericho fan who has appreciated his evolutions and his reinventions. So yeah, I don't know. The match itself I thought was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
There were some sloppy elements in there as well. And look, you know, the CMLL integration I don't really know why they're there. Like, I'm not going to complain about watching. I love Mexican wrestling, so I'm not going to be complaining about it. But this is sort of the epitome of heatless. You know, you can't...
No, we'll get to that. We'll get to the epitome of heatless wrestling.
There's something between... So there are some people who would look at the level of... Because you're so knowledgeable about pro wrestling.
Thank
right?
you.
I've watched a lot of wrestling in my life. I'm a 25 plus year fan at this stage. But there are some blind spots I have. I don't watch all of the wrestling. There are some people who will look at me and think I don't watch enough. And there are some people who look at you and say, well, you can't expect everyone to have that level of knowledge.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, the reality should be somewhere in between. This match was kind of an example of that in a way. I don't know. I liked the match, but it was tepid.
It was. And I thought the match itself was quite good on the whole. Like you said, there was some sloppiness. Jericho goes into the steps on the outside and, you know, it felt like they couldn't quite work out who was going to go into the steps.
Yeah.
But regardless, they moved on and it still all worked out well enough. I thought the match maybe felt like it went on just a little too long. Jericho caught Teton coming off of the ropes with the springboard and caught him with the Codebreaker, and that was a near fall, and I thought that could have been the three, and instead they went just a little bit longer, and Teton went for his, you know, grabs the arm, hops up on the ropes, does the couple bounces, goes for a Hurricane Rana, but Jericho holds on to him, turns it into the walls, and gets the submission. It was a fine finish. It played off of something that happened earlier in the match. It's good stuff. It just felt like it could have gone on a little bit long or gone on a little bit too long. And I'm not going to take away from like a lot of Jericho's matches because a lot of them still end up being quite good. Mm. You know, anytime people criticize Jericho and such, a lot of fans will point out, you know, when he was ROH champion. And the quality of wrestling that we got out of that reign, whether it was him wrestling Bandido or Ishii or whatnot, and I don't think there's been a drastic change in the quality of his work in the ring between then and now, but he's stale. He's totally stale,
yeah.
And he's got a lot of very bad will with people now.
And also, this is so...
And that
yeah,
is
a good
starting
point.
To build up.
It's a good point, because also there's an energy when he came to the ring. I just felt like... Jericho is walking to the ring. Like, it took ages for him to come out, and then he's walking, and his face doesn't seem into it. And, like, you know, I like the finish sequence as well. Yeah, it's there's a lot of ill will. And
yeah.
Like, I'm not even necessarily going to comment on the things that went down pre-World's End, because there's still a lot of question marks over all of it.
No, but it goes to a lot of different things of
right.
bad will.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not just one thing.
Mm.
It's a lot of things. And it's a lot of... You know, the Jericho vortex is a very real thing.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of components to it. And it does make me very worried when you consider that after this match, he gets jumped by the Gates of Agony and eventually gets saved by Hook. And this leads to a tag match those two teams are going to have on Big Business. But I look at the recent trend of Jericho and his latching himself to the hot new thing.
Yeah.
Whoever that might be at the time. And you look at who the Gates of Agony are aligned with, and it does fill me with dread to think of a potential Jericho Swerve program that this could be setting up.
Mm.
I don't know that it is. Don't know that that is the direction or even a direction. I don't know if those two will ever cross paths. But God, I hope they don't right now.
I think ultimately is I want to see Jericho stop being stale. I want the next reinvention, whatever it looks like.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to be trapped in this vortex.
Yeah. So after that, we had Tony Schiavone in the ring interviewing FTR, who basically just went, we lost. You know, that was kind of the sum total of their promo. They were just kind of like, they said it much better than that. They are good promos. They said, you know, sometimes life will knock you down and kick you while you're there, but it's up to you to get back up and such. It was kind of just like a rah-rah promo and a good one. But they said that they're going to enter the tag team title tournament and win it, become the first ever three-time tag team champions. And then they got interrupted by the Infantry, which is very interesting because this is not a tag team that AEW TV has been super familiar with hardly at all. We are loosely familiar with Captain Sean Dean. This is somebody who was in the Nightmare family, although never got much of a push while he was there. He teamed with Cody a few times, but otherwise was kind of a background member of whatever else was going on. But he and his tag team partner, Carly Bravo, come down to the ring, and they've got some charisma. There's some good talkers, and they go down, and, you know, it's one of those deals where the music hits and everyone goes, huh. Mm. It's not like a wow or a boo. It's just kind of like a, all right, let's see how this goes, because they're unfamiliar. And that's how all these things typically start, with people you're unfamiliar with. Come down to the ring, and they say that they're the ones that are going to win the tag team titles. And they said that they didn't mean to interrupt. They were just coming down from Magic City, which I had to Google. I imagined I knew what it was, but I had to Google to confirm. It is a strip club. And the people chanted Magic City, so shout out to Atlanta.
About six of those people chanting had been, I'm sure.
And they said, in a saucy little line, that they were there to give the tag team division a revival. Ooh! And the other ones went, say yeah. So they just said, like, ooh, very edgy, boys. Yeah, well, may the best team win. We're coming for your spot. Is how this all ended. So I imagine this is either going to be a first round match or maybe a second round match if they give the infantry a win. Mm-hmm. But it was like, okay, I'm into it. I don't see any reason why we can't get a new team in the mix here. You know, get some new blood on TV.
100%.
Give them a win in the first round against some team that's never going to win. And then, hey, here we go. This can be a main event of collision in a week or two.
I think you got a real opportunity here. I think... the tag team division over the past year was something that I absolutely adored. I think for the latter half of, particularly when it was Starks and Big Bill, it was a little bit an afterthought. Sting and Darby getting it was more of a thank you to Sting than anything else. And now they're vacant. We can kind of do what we want. I think calling up new people, I think taking any time over this tournament, maybe it's a second round match. Maybe it is a first round match and it's a shocker. FTR get the loss. And then what do we do with FTR kind of thing? Maybe that continues that. You know, story. Do FTR join with the Elite, like, or something like that? I think there's a lot of questions that you can raise by having an upstart team beat FTR.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that that's what's going to happen. Because if I had to guess, my thought would be that you're going to do FTR BCC again,
right,
at Dynasty, and FTR probably get the win in that match. But I'm into it. I'm into giving this all a little bit more stakes and a little bit more
that
purpose.
Also sounds good to me. There are many different opportunities that you can do, and now that we've essentially got a clean slate of the tag team division, bring it.
Yeah. So then we had what I would consider the peak of Heatless Wrestling, and I have no idea why this was on the show. We'll get into it. Because we had Mystico, who I did check and is
first
Sin Cara.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that a thing?
Listen, Lucha Libre lineages do my head in.
Okay.
I said on a Dynamite podcast when the CMLL guy showed up, where I was like, oh, yeah, and Mascara Dorada, Grand Metalik. And they're like, no, this is a different guy who's now called Mascara Dorada. And,
right.
And whatever. And they do this. There's been like four different Mysticos. L.A. Park and La Parka. I never know which one's which. It's a thing. And it does my head in. So I did double check. And this is the original Mystico. Thumbs up for that. Original Mystico, for all his faults in WWE, was a hell of a star in CMLL. Mm. So,
there was a reason they hyped him so much.
Yeah, exactly. And so he went one-on-one in this match with Angelico, which I always thought was Angelico, and maybe it was, and it's been changed, but Tony Schiavone at one point in this match said Angelico and corrected himself to Angelico, so I'm going to go ahead and say that that's what his name is pronounced as now. This was just like a fine little match. It went on longer than a quick... inoffensive match would be. And it's not like the work was bad, but why is the original Mystico wrestling Angelico on TV? You know, this felt like a dark match that ended up on the main show. And I guess it's nice to see the CMLL folks get a win every once in a while, especially one with as much pedigree as the original Mystico. But I was, this was where I was like, I kind of feel like this match should have been the spot of like your second women's match on the show.
Sure.
Where was the Thunder Rosa spot on this show? Where was the Serena Deeb spot on this show? Where was, I don't know, another match for Deonna Purrazzo coming off
or
the pay-per-view?
Or setting up something for Willow and Riho. Like,
yes, exactly that. Willow getting a win, Julia Hart being in a match, Sky Blue being in a match, whichever version of any of that you wanted to do. There's so many better uses of this TV time than what we got here. And Mystica won. He won with La Mystica and tapped Angelico out. And then afterwards shook the hand of Angelico, and Serpentico didn't seem too happy about it, but they raised his hand and that was it. And it was like, okay, that was a fine little match, but I question its existence.
It goes back to the question of what are the CMLL people here for? And I don't just mean because it's cross-promotional, we get to see some good matches, because that's not what I'm asking. You know, it's what's the storyline reason, what's going on, what am I here to root for? Like, should I, you said
what's
it
the
was
motivation?
Nice, you said it was nice to see the CMLL guys get a win. Why should I care? Like, what's the, you know, really, if I'm an AEW fan and I'm seeing these people come in, why should I care whether or not CMLL gets a notch of a victory? What's the reason? I have nothing to say.
Yeah. And then we had our main event. And boy, what a main event it was. Because it was the House of Black, Malakai, Buddy Matthews, and Brody King, against the hodgepodge team of Mark Briscoe, Jay Lethal, and Jeff Jarrett. Now, they had a little promo segment earlier in the night, basically just to squash any tension that Mark Briscoe and Jeff Jarrett may have had. And it never played into this match, so I guess the beef was squashed. But boy, this was a weird match. So this was an Atlanta street fight, and it was filled with plunder. Jeff Jarrett comes down to the ring. He's got a trash can filled with hockey sticks and kendo sticks and cookie sheets and whatnot. And they go down to the ring, and there's tables aplenty. And some of the action in this was, well, like, I don't even know how to review this match, because there were parts of it that didn't work for me at all. There were other parts of it, like Brody King hitting his running crossbody the table, where I was just like, that is awesome. Yeah. I love Brody King so much. And at the same time, this match was getting like, this is awesome chants from the crowd. So you could kind of tell that the people were into what they were seeing. You know, it's a big carnage plunder match and whatnot. So it worked for them. So on some level, they were doing something right. The other bits of this match, though, were a little bit more difficult to review in that sense, because we had a table set up at ringside. And we started pouring lighter fluid on it. And meanwhile, Mark Briscoe takes, I think, the most sickening bump I've seen all year, where he overshoots the table and lands flat back on the floor on a pile of chairs. That was madness. And so while he is out cold, they are setting up this table at ringside with lighter fluid and such. And as they're doing this, Sanjay Dutt comes down and hits Buddy Matthews with a guitar. And it goes to show how strong Sanjay Dutt is, because the guitar didn't break. And if you can't break a gimmick guitar, either it's not a gimmick guitar or you're swinging that thing not very hard. And Buddy Matthews starts to chase him up the ramp. And Sanjay Dutt is crawling away behind him. And eventually Julia Hart comes down and stops him. And they pour gasoline all over him. And she stood there with the lighter.
Like she's at a gig. Like,
yeah, slowly exactly. Waving it back slowly and waving it. And Karen Jarrett then comes out and hits Buddy Matthews with a low blow. And she gets in the face of Julia Hart. And Julia Hart missed her. But doesn't really missed her. She just kind of spits black goo in her face.
And because of the lighting, you couldn't really see much of the goo anyway. So
right.
It was, I had to do context clues.
Yeah, it was, I laughed at it, but I don't think that was supposed to be the desired effect. But all this goes on, and then back down in the ring, Brody King chokes out Jay Lethal with his, like, hanging sleeper hold, which is still one of the coolest moves in AEW. Chokes him out, turns around, and gets hit with the guitar over the head, bang, by Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff Jarrett, you know, the guitar explodes, and then Brody King kind of just falls back through a table. He's out. Jeff Jarrett gets hit with the black mass. And then Mark Briscoe gets back up. How, I don't know. But he gets back up. And he gets ready to do a plancha. And he gets caught on the plancha by Buddy Matthews and Malachi Black. They powerbomb him on the apron. It sounds worse than it was because the apron comes out so far now that he basically just took a back bump on it. And then they pick him back up. They light the table on fire and they put him through it with a power bomb. And it looked very painful because that fire did not go out in one go. And they immediately rolled him back in the ring, got the pin. And I want to point out one really cool little detail that I really enjoyed, because they pulled Brody King out of the rubble and he tried to get back in the ring to finish the fight, not realizing that they had already won. I really like that.
That's a nice touch.
Otherwise, I don't know.
Yeah, this was a mess.
There was some fun elements.
Yeah.
The people seemed to get into it, but it's not my kind of match.
Here's the thing. The people are going to get into it because it's fun to be in the room when nonsense is going down.
Sure,
like, that's just
how it is.
Your response to Brody King is, I think, a perfectly natural human response to Brody King, because, yes, it is incredible. He is incredible. You look at him, his pace, his agility, him crashing through that table with the crossbody looked amazing. It's gonna that brings out a primal reaction from an audience member, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we're gonna get Karen Jarrett going after the TBS Championship, which I'm not gonna pretend I don't want to see. that sounds funny. What's going on? What's this for?
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a parrot of bad faith takes, because I think this comes from a good faith place, personally. Mm-hmm. Of course I do. It's my take. I do think there is something in overusing weapons matches and plunder spots. And
sure.
And why in the name of hell did I have a flaming table on my Saturday evening television program that was free to watch? Like, why was a flaming table spot not treated like it was the end of days? It was the thing. Fans, thanks very much for tuning in. Watch Big Business on Wednesday. See you soon. Why in the name of hell was that there? Like, I personally don't love that level of violence in my wrestling anyway. There's a power in saving things up. When we looked at the Derby spot at Revolution where he jumped onto that table, for me, that's a risk that I don't think is necessary for a human to take for my entertainment. But then not everything is for me.
Mm.
It's not mine to get. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. Well, it's not for me to get. Other people do. You know, there's Luke there just saying, well, it looks awesome. And like, you know, that's, of course,
Jackass,
it is.
Yeah.
Luke Owen, yeah. Which is, yeah, that's hypocritical to me. I love Jackass. Anyway, there's something about using it smartly. You know how blood is barely anywhere in a WWE these days? I watched Rock Austin Mania 17 last night, and they bleed quite profusely, and it adds to it because I haven't seen it in a long time, and I've gone back and watched it and gone, wow, that's made an impact. If you drop an F-bomb occasionally, it's far more effective than F-bombing all the time. So I didn't need this level of plunder in a collision main event of a Saturday night with a flaming table. And at one point they're pouring gasoline all over Sanjay Dutt. Do I believe for a second that he's going to actually be lit on fire? No, I don't. Also, if they were going to, she wouldn't have stood there like a Morgoth at her gig. She would have done it. Like, you know, she had all the time in the world. It just was a very confusing plotting, and the law of diminishing returns, Darby and Sting's main event, which was the correct place to use that level of violence, by the way, if you're going to, whether or not I liked it, objectively, that's the correct place for it. Followed by the weaponsy match on Dynamite, followed by this one, followed by, it's just, if I'm going to see it all the same, it's the same with the chops, you know?
Sure.
If I see too many chops and I see big welts on your chest, well, I see that every week now. It doesn't have the same level of impact on me.
Yeah.
It was odd.
It's difficult because I've heard theories that they're leading to like an Inferno match or something of that note here, because they were talking about fire and such in their Dynamite promo, the House of Black were. And of course, we then had this finish. So maybe more fire is the answer to the end of this feud. But I do agree, like, the Julia Hart gas can spot drove me nuts, because I've seen this sort of thing done well. You know, ways that make sense where you can tell a story with it. Of course, the, You know, talk about a gas can. You go back to the Eddie Kingston spot in the first Anarchy in the Arena match where, well, he brought a gas can down to the ring. Why didn't he use it? Because he then started fighting with his own teammates and such, because he was happy to pour it not only on his opponent, but on Bryan Danielson as well. And then Bryan Danielson and him started infighting. So you get a reason, a logical reason why you don't get that spot. When you then have Julia Hart just going, Ooh. I'm just like, I know you're not going to.
And the person who stopped them was Karen Jarrett.
Yeah.
Karen not Jarrett neutralized Buddy Murphy.
Yeah. I didn't buy that.
Yeah.
You know, I find quite a lot of the House of Black stuff difficult to get into for reasons that we've gone over plenty of times. But this one was just a little bit too much for me, you know? And again, I don't mind plunder in my wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we look at the Sammy Guevara Powerhouse Hobbs match from a couple of weeks ago. I thought that was a very good plunder match. You know, I don't see that much of a difference between a lot of the plunder used there and a lot of the plunder used here, you know, tables and chairs and such, but that one was a better match.
Yes, I think that's probably it.
And if it all is used to then have a very good match, I'm very much okay with it. And that's why I don't think this flaming table spot or a lot of the things we get here is even going to be remembered quite like the Cody flaming table spot from a few years ago in AEW. Because that match was really good.
That's what I'm saying. If you're going to do something like this, it needs to be the most memorable evs. Like, you know when, you know, it went wrong, but you know when the exploding deathmatch debacle went down in Revolution, and Eddie Kingston selling it like he's fully just been blown up. Like the pyro was gash, but like the gravitas of the moment was not. You know,
sure.
When Roddy took a muscle buster on a chair, the moment was sold with such gravitas. If you're gonna use a flaming table spot, and if you're gonna set us up for an inferno match at some point down the line. Gravitas. This was a gosh, that was bad. Anyway, don't worry, they've got flannels on him. Tune into Dynamite. Like that is so weak.
Yeah.
So weak.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I do feel like I enjoyed this collision a little bit less as it went on.
Yeah, I do too.
But the first half hour of this show was like some of the best pro wrestling TV I've seen all year. So
there's a lot to look forward to on this.
There is. And it doesn't diminish any of the excitement I have about AEW's product right now. So if you're going to check out anything from this show, make sure you check out the Danielson match and the Okada squash and the following return. Because otherwise, there's not a whole lot to really write home about on this show. But if you disagree, let us know in the comments down below. Let us know what you thought of this collision. And again, of course, let us know what you thought about the return of Pac, his upcoming six-man tag on Big Business. Big Business as a whole, the Danielson match. If you're excited about Bryan Danielson or Will Ospreay, I can't imagine anybody not. But let us know in the comments down below, one way or the other. That will do it for this episode of our collision review. We are going to be back tomorrow with our Raw review. It'll be the Truth, Dan Layton, and the lovely Luke Owen. Fingers crossed.
Big gauntlet match.
He's a little under the weather, so we're going to hope that Luke is well enough to come in and do it. Otherwise, you'll have a mystery partner of some sort.
Fabulous.
So we will see you then. I've been Tempest. That's been the Truth, Dan Layton, and that was Collision. Nailed it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.